During this holiday season, my thoughts turn to those who have made this show possible, and I would like to wish our listeners, our sponsors, and everyone else a Merry Christmas. Winchester AA target loads have long been the standard of performance in shotgun sports. Available in over 50 different load specs, the AA line is known for its 6% antimony shot, reloadable hull, clean burning propellant, and of course, the famous AA wad. Winchester AA, it's the choice of champions.
You are now tuned into Shotgun Sports USA, powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S.
and streaming all over the world,
we talk to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you are into clay target sports, you are at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Remember to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com.
My guest on the show today is an NSCA Level 3 instructor and a shotgun coach. He has a very interesting story on how he got involved in the sport, where he wants to be in the sport, and what he's going to do to get there. Please welcome to the show, Bill Elliott. Bill, welcome to the show. I'm glad to have you on.
Justin, thanks for having me on.
I think a lot of people have heard of you, but may not know how you got into doing what you do. You just kind of emerged into a clay coach, and I want to get the story from you. You were a school teacher all the way to a university dean, shot at this time. You quit a very good job to start a career combining the two, and now you still teach, but you teach people with a shotgun. How did this happen?
Well, it was interesting. I remember the day I took the parachute off and kind of jumped into all this, but it all stems back to like around early 1990s. I was a punk skateboarder, 42 detentions, seventh grade, and you know, was learning my lessons and life, and started working at this gun club called the Avon Sportsman's Club, and they had a trap field, a skeet field, a rifle and pistol range, and I was that kid that, you know, they looked at and said, "Hey, kid, get in the hole." So I'd go down in the trap house and down there for probably 6 to 7 hours. And at the end of the day, there was always a guy like Bill McCabe or Roy Martin or Wally Preslin. These guys had the old Winchester 101 or the Belgian Brownings. And they'd say, "Hey, you want to shoot my gun?" And man, my eyes would just light up. And I tell people this day is the best job I ever had. If you think about it, it's come full circle. But in between that, I went to Ohio State and got my graduate degree from Baldwin Wallace, where I studied special education, and I was a high school teacher, director at the local career center, and then I went on to be university dean. And it was about when I was 40 years old, and I just said, like, there's just got to be something else out there. I was coaching on the side about 15 to 20 hours a week, and I just knew if I never took that leap of faith, you know, in this career journey, I'd always look back and say, what if? And, you know, I was fortunate. I always had Don Curry in my ear saying, "Do it, Bill, do it. And, you know, he's been a great mentor along the way, and now I'm doing it full bore, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40 hours a week, depending on the weather here in beautiful Northeast Ohio.
Yeah. So you went to school, obviously, to be a teacher or a part of an administrative team or something. So,
sure.
So why did you all of a sudden decide that this is just, was it just not fun anymore, or was it something that you were bored with?
I think it goes back to the lasting impression that that job left on me. I loved shooting. I loved clay target shooting. You know, my dad was always into like rifles and pistols. And I actually got him into clay target shooting from, you know, working at the Avon Sportsman's Club. But, you know, going back to what you're asking about the teaching and all that, if you think about it, like when you go to school to become a teacher, they teach you about the, you know, how people learn differently, whether it's audio, auditory, kinesthetic, or visual, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think back to my first classroom in this new school district. I walked in, I just got my master's degree in special education. And so in that classroom, I think I had three Down syndrome students, two autistic students, probably two behavioral students, and probably three ADHD students who I could totally relate with because I'm as ADHD as they come if you know me well enough. But I was like, okay, I in public service, I don't get to pick my fruit. But you need to find a way, Bill, to make sure that each one of these individuals in this class learn what you're trying to get through. And so I believe that really, really helps me, you know, as a coach, because if I can understand how people learn, then I can get the point across a lot better. And I know, you know, everyone, there's an old Navy SEAL rule called the 40% rule, that you've only used 40% of what's in your tank. There's another 60% in you that we're just trying to extrapolate out of you.
Being a teacher has helped you moving into what you're doing now. How has it made it easier for you to relay a lesson or a message to someone?
Well, I guess if it's no different than when I get up in the morning and go to a shooting tournament, everything's, you know, mission-based. What's the mission for the day, Bill? Well, you got three students. Okay, and each one of those students, what's the specific objective for those students? And what are the benchmarks that you're going to get to with those students today? Now, do you know, does the lesson plan always go as follows? No, but it definitely helps me, you know, understanding how lesson planning went in the educational realm. It carries over right into the coaching realm and shotgun coaching. And, you know, the way I look at it is sometimes you got to pivot a little bit. Sometimes you got to be flexible, but it's, you know, whether you're coaching basketball or football or you're in the classroom or you're coaching shooters,
you're still coaching and teaching.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all strategic plan. It's all mission based. It's all objectives with benchmarks to get you to the goal in mind.
Yeah. You know, most successful clay coaches are proven champions. Most. I'm not saying all.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether it's national, world champions, regionals, HOAs, Big Blast, whatever you have. But this is different for you. You have no major wins. So what do you say to people when this seems to be an issue about you being a coach?
You know, it's funny. It hasn't really impacted me at this point. I mean, I'm coaching 30 to 40 hours a week, but I can tell you this. I totally get what others would question or wonder, like, hey, well, that guy hasn't done anything. Well, that guy or Bill Elliott, who's he? Well, give me time,
right?
I mean, it takes time. Just like shooting is just like an apprenticeship program, if you think about it. Like, you know, not many people, unless you came from a gun club or maybe you had resources in your corner that helped you along the way that allowed you to shoot 1,000 targets a week and you didn't have to work or something like that. I mean, if you take advantage of those resources, great. But to the people who, you know, question somebody's coaching ability on the success that they have seen on the big stage, I just say, you know, hopefully give me time because I'm chasing it too. Like this year, I'm going to trying to hit all the regionals, trying to hit all the, I'm going to the Gator Cup. I'm going to some of the Florida shoots. It just takes time. And I think there are some people though that don't want that. And I guess I don't understand that because I love competing. I love competing when I finally got my legs under me a little bit in life where I could afford it.
Right.
That was huge. And when you get on a good roll in life, you know, things happen in life that, hey, you might have to take a step back for a year and a half or 2 years. But when you get a good, consistent roll in competing, that's when I think, you know, some major wins or some big blast wins or things like that are coming for you down the road.
Yeah. So what big shoots, Bill, have you been to? I know you're from up north, so.
Yeah, yeah. I've shot the Northeast Regional. I've shot Nationals. Like, you know, it was funny. Like this past year at Regional, Northeast Regionals, I had a really, really strong first day. Mm-hmm. Really strong. Felt great. You know, I was up there with, you know, the names that I read about or the people I call every once in a while. And man, did that feel nice. Well, second day, not so good. But I always go back to remember what Nick Saban said. How did you feel?
Yeah.
Whether you win or whether you lose, how did you feel? And I'll tell you, that was a long 8-hour drive home.
I'd probably take some advice from Nick Saban.
right. And he's one of the guys I look up to. But I also go back to, I remember I took a lesson with Wendell Cherry. This was like 15 years ago when I first got into the game. Mm-hmm. And Wendell gave me some homework. And I was like, well, I can't do that. And he's like, well, why not? I'm like, I can't afford that. He's like, what do you drive? And I'm like, oh, I drive a Taurus. And he's like, well, sell it. What do you mean? Well, sell it so you have money so you can do what I'm asking you to do. And I never understood that commitment level until now.
Castellani shooting vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vests on the market. Castellani vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier of Castellani vests in the United States. Visit ultimateshootingaccessories.com for more information and to place your order.
That's a pretty big commitment right there.
Yeah.
You know, sell your means of transportation so you, so you can go shoot clays. Yeah. So it's kind of stemming back to the question just a second ago.
Yeah.
As far as the clays coaching, do you think you should have a good resume or shooting resume? And if so, why or why not?
Yeah. Yeah. I think first of all, it depends on the commitment level of the people you're trying to coach, right? I think if you're trying to do more recreational entry-level type shooters, the goal is to be safe, have fun, right? But that's not where I want to be. I want to coach top-level shooters. I want to see in every class down, whether it's master, double A, B, C, I want to see my students winning. Mm-hmm. And I think in order to coach at that kind of level, you have to see the targets that people are seeing nowadays. Think of how much machines have changed in the last 5 years, right?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a target on a straight line anymore. Everything is in transition. Mm-hmm. So like for me, it's really important that, you know, I take lessons with a coach that's keeping up with the game.
Let's go into your coaching background a little. You coach individuals and corporate groups. In your opinion, what's the difference between an individual and then an individual and a corporate group?
Right. So think about this. The other day I had 30 attorneys for a corporate outing, team building activity. And I'm like, all right, so here's today's goal, right? Today's goal is specific focus equals specific results. Vague focus equals vague results. No different than what you're doing in your office at work.
Right.
So, you know, I'm trying to get them comfortable in their stance. I'm checking their eye dominance because I want to make sure that they leave with a smile on their face because they at least broke some targets. I got to check on their recoil sensitivity because I'm trying to create addicts. We're in the hospitality industry on a day like that, but I want them coming back because I know these are the type of people that we want involved in our industry. A little bit different than somebody who's coming to me that is like an individual lesson, you know, and trying to find out, you know, what would be a home run for that student for the day. And then I introduce them to my curriculum. And I say, here's my curriculum. Here's how it works. If you're interested in it, great. If you just want a one-off lesson type today, then I can give you that. But I'm going to tell you, there's a difference between a coach and an instructor.
Right.
And so when I give those individual lessons, I'm trying to help them understand, if you follow this sequential process, I promise you, you'll see results. But if you come to me and say, you know, I just want to work on left to right chandelles today and right to left 45 yard fast crossers. Mm-hmm. Well, we can work on that, but if your foundation isn't there, then you're never going to be consistent. So the difference between what I would call an individualized lesson and a corporate outing or like a recreational outing, you know, you're managing safety at the highest level. Can you imagine like 30 attorneys just holding guns who've never even shot in their life.
No, not at all. I was just thinking that. They're probably out there just wanting to have a good time and not thinking about all that at the same time, you know? So
yeah, you know, they break that first clay target and they got two shells in their gun. They're like, yeah, whoa, keep that gun pointing down range, please.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. What is your, you just mentioned a second ago, there's a difference in a coach and an instructor. Give me your difference in the two.
It's huge. I the difference between a coach and an instructor, just gives lessons. You don't hear from him or her. I know we're all busy. We are all busy. I get that. But man, there's nothing better than getting a text from your coach or saying, hey, I saw you won AA the other day. Keep up the great work. Hey, I saw you finished in the top four of your class. Even though you didn't win, remember the goal is to always be consistent. Right. I can tell you stayed in your mental game the whole way. Yeah. When you don't hear from somebody, that's when you're just an instructor. You're just giving lessons. Yeah. And like I said, I know we're all busy, but hearing from your coach is huge.
I was just thinking that it would make someone feel good just to know that you were looking, you know.
You should see me scan iClays, Score Chaser, and WinScore every Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I just want to give them a little, hey,
right,
you know, a little pat on the back.
Yeah. So are you more into competitive shooters or recreational shooters, Bill?
I would say it's about 60-40, 70-30, definitely more on the competitive side. If they're not on the competitive side, I love to take a recreational shooter and convert them. I shoot with all my students. That was probably one of the hardest things I had to get used to. When you're coaching so many people, you're bound to get squatted with them. And I used to try and avoid it. And I remember I was talking with David about it, Radulovich, mm-hmm. and just really, really saying, hey, you know, he's like, just get used to it. Take your time, man. He's like, squat up with them. And eventually, if they understand how you coach and what your expectations are of good squad culture, because there is a such thing as squad culture, mm-hmm. then guess what? You always have good people to shoot with.
Not everyone has the same style of coaching or techniques as far as teaching someone something. So how do you feel that what you do in your lessons is just as beneficial to people as anyone else?
I think the biggest thing is, like I spoke about earlier, look, you can't make an offensive lineman a cornerback, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You can't. You got to look at, what does that person bring to the table? We can only break a person's stance down so much, right? I mean, you look in our game. I mean, you see everybody, they got different stances, different pre-shot routines. I think what I try and do is find out who that version is of them. I like to look at the inbound and outbound move first, you know, the inbound quartering move, outbound quartering move, because I believe that's 70% of the game. That's where the game is won in A class and below. I really believe that.
Yeah.
And I want to see what their default move is based on the character of the target. So if a target is quartering, but it's got speed, are you still going to start on the back edge of it, or will you start on the middle of the target or the front side? And I want to figure out why you like to start there, because some people like to start on the front side of a quartering target. Me personally, I like to start on kind of the back side.
Right.
But I want to know why, like what's their thinking, and then, you know, let them try that out. And then after that, like I'm really big into drill work. Like one of the things that you do when you're coaching like football or basketball is you don't play football every day, or you don't roll the basketball and do full bore open gym every day. You're working on technique, mechanics through drills.
Right.
And I'll have my students do a lot of drills.
Well, I mean, you know, they say practice makes perfect. You know, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of different little sayings like that,
but right,
the more you practice something, the better you get. And I guess that's why you would have them work on drills, is what I'm assuming.
It's pretty cool. So, well, I know we're going to talk about this later, but I wrote an article in Clay Shooting USA called 5 for 5. And in that article, I had the opportunity to interview 20 of the top shooters in the United States. And I tell people, if you have a chance, read this series, because I mean, anywhere from, you know, Kevin DeMichael to Wendell Cherry to David Radulovich to Bobby Fowler, I mean, Braxton Oliver, and you will see who's not afraid to come from the backside of the target, who's not afraid to change chokes, who uses different shell sizes. And pretty much out of those 20 shooters, only two of them truly used what they would call one default move to break a target. The other ones have a bag of tools, a bag of tricks.
That's probably interesting. Where was that at? Was that published where?
Yeah, it was in Clay Shooting USA, and we ran it for it ran in four different magazines, and it's really cool. I asked them five questions, and Wilgus was in it, and talked about why he uses what he does and technique. I mean, a bunch of people. Yeah. Really cool.
Well, I mean, since we're on the topic, what other magazines do you write for?
Or is that I write for Clay Shooting USA, yeah, and then Clay Target Nation.
How did you get involved with this?
So
you volunteer?
it's funny. My father, who I'm really tight with, him and I, we bird hunt a ton. We train bird dogs, and we upland hunt, pheasant, grouse, quail, things like that.
And yeah,
he would always write these stories that he would have hidden, like, and he would show them to me. And, so I started writing a little bit and shared some of it with Don Curry. And Don's like, hey, you got to start writing for the magazines. And I just started writing because I've always enjoyed it. When I'm on an airplane, I'm always either reading or writing. It's just something I really enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, how long have you been doing this, Bill?
I've been writing now for both magazines for about 5 years, and I'm always welcome to new ideas. I'm doing this series right now. It's the target setter's mindset.
Yeah.
So I'm doing like Hemingway and Longo and Seibert and Joe Scull, Anthony Matteries, Travis Mears, a bunch of different target setters, and I asked five questions to them. Because I think it gives the reader an insight to the part we don't really focus on enough.
Target setting is something you're interested in too, right?
I love it. To me, it is, it's just one of the most creative ways, and you can really, really, show how much you appreciate the game. I think a good target setter, you'll see how hard they work.
Now, is this something you would want to do at a big tournament instead of shooting it, setting some targets for people?
Maybe down the road, but right now I just love shooting. Yeah. I love competing. Yeah. I love competing.
You had told me that you like to surround yourself with certain people. And I thought about that when I read it, and I thought surrounding yourself with good company can always make you successful. My dad told me that a long time ago. And I heard a saying the other day, somewhere online, and the guy said, show me your friends and I'll show you your future.
Yep.
And I'm assuming you kind of live by this by mentioning that. So in the clay shooting world, who do you surround yourself with, and how have they impacted your life and your career?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? They say you are who you run with. Well, when I got into this, I said, just like you did in education, Bill, immerse yourself in it. Like, open yourself up to constructive criticism, open yourself up to suggestion. I can tell you, like, Sean Spindell at Hillendale, Jake Spangler at Cardinal, Bruce Schultz always sends me some really cool mental notes. Don Curry's been a great mentor. But then, like, on any day, I could pick up the phone and call Dave Radulovich or call Braxton or Mike Longo, Jasper, anyone, and just have a good conversation about what they're seeing in the industry. But outside of that, I've surrounded myself with three mentors from the private sector who really, really have, helped me guide my business model.
Wait, private sector, you mean people that don't shoot?
Yeah, okay. People that, okay, I really, really looked up to and still look up to this day.
Yeah.
They shoot, but they're not, they're not masterclassed. They're not even, two of them aren't even registered shooters, but they've given me a ton of advice on how to run my business, or if I have an idea, I'll run it by them, because they don't have any skin in the game.
Good businessmen, women.
Yeah. And, one of the things I've done in the last 6 months is really, really, I was trying to think of like leaders out there who are successful, CEO, CFOs, where is it repeatable? And I really couldn't find it. So I started studying people who were successful, and what came up was Navy SEALs. So I've really, really been studying the Navy SEAL mindset and the Navy SEAL training the last 6 months. And man, you wouldn't believe the stuff that comes out of that.
Man, I'm telling you, I've read about those guys too, and they are absolutely insane with what they do.
Yeah, it's next level. It really is. But if you want to be at that high level, you know, maybe there's a couple things that we can borrow from them in their training that we can transition into our training as shooters on mental toughness, or, you know, the mission-based outcomes that can help.
Yeah. Well, even though you're a coach, you're still going to get lessons yourself, working on yourself.
Heck yeah.
So how is this benefiting you as a shooter and a coach?
I love going to lessons. And the way I look at it is, if ego is the enemy of advancement, right? One of the things that always made me better, I remember I had this, when I was the university dean, I had this guy in New York named Anthony Stanziani, right? And he was my, supervisor, and he would call me every day and say, "Hey kid, what's the plus delta for today?" Every single day. So, you know, what's going well and where are the opportunities?
Right.
And so in the past, I've taken lessons, you know, with David Radulovich, Don Curry, Anthony Matteries, Juan Cherry, Matt Hudeman, just really, really just looking at, you know, every one of them is a little different, but if I can come away with two or three nuggets from every single one of those lessons, then why not?
Yeah. Do you incorporate this stuff you learn into your own instruction also?
What do you think? Heck yeah. I mean, think about this. In any profession, there's professional development, isn't there?
Oh yeah.
We really don't have professional development. So to me, if I'm going to go and spend, you know, $1,500 and travel 8 hours, and I'm going to take the most out of it for myself, but also, you know, what can I borrow?
Maybe they say something different and better than what you say, and it's worth putting it into your, you know.
Yeah, I remember one time I went to Anthony. I was like, "Hey, I want you to work on something with me today." And he's like, "What's that?" I said, "I want to learn how to shoot a fully mounted gun." He's like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "Well, when I switched to left-handed, I said I never really learned how to shoot a fully mounted gun. You know how people call it pre-mount? Well, it's mounted, right?"
Right.
And I said, I want to learn how to look around a gun too. And he's like, "Bill, that's why guys like me and Zach beat you."
Yeah.
And I was like, "You're exactly right." And so, like, if I don't learn this, it's going to be something that always nags at me.
So when you give your lessons, what clubs are you normally at? And then where do you go if you go anywhere?
Typically, I have five clubs, like in the Ohio, Michigan area, Hillendale, Cardinal Shooting Center, South Cuyahoga, C4, Emmett County up in Michigan. There's a couple others. I'd really like to branch into Pennsylvania on the western side a little bit, but there's only so much you can do, and time in the car is, you know, when you're driving to and from a club to give a lesson, you got to see if it's worth the drive.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know,
I got two little ones at home. I got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and it's madness here. So
being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by Pro-Matic traps?" Think about that statement for a minute. He's right. And you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, 5-stamp, and sporting clays, designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the Claybot by Rainier Products. Visit www.backwoodsquailclub.com or give him a call at 843-546-1466.
I have never been up north to shoot. Well, I went to Chicago once, but other than that, I have not been up anywhere else. Ohio, none of those places.
Oh, you got to come to our state shoot.
Yeah.
Well, our state shoot's just awesome.
That's what everybody keeps saying, is that's a good state shoot.
It is. Whether, you know, last few years it's been hosted by Hillendale and Cardinal, and they're both just awesome facilities, but so different.
Is it now the weather up there right now? You got snow all over the ground?
Not, you know what? It's funny. When I started this journey working outside, I became a weatherman, and I can tell you, I've been pretty fortunate these last 3 years. We do not have snow yet, but it's coming. I mean, it's been 28 degrees, 50-mile-an-hour winds. The tournament here last weekend at Hillendale was just, it was brutal. It was, I mean, you heard trees falling down in the background. And
wow.
That's crazy.
Now, where is Hillendale?
Hillendale's in Medina, Ohio, so just about a half hour south of Cleveland.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know what? I also coach at Eagle's Nest, Dan Bailey's club. Mm-hmm. And Dan is just doing a phenomenal job with that club. Every time you go there, it's, you know, he's got something new going on.
I see him in a lot of shoots. No matter where they're at, I see him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes everywhere.
I mean, so if you think about it, like between Hillendale, Cardinal, Eagle's Nest, South Cuyahoga, we're really blessed with awesome clubs in this area.
Are you involved in SCTP coaching any of the youth?
Yeah, we have a huge team. Yeah. We got about 70 to 80 kids on our team.
Which do you prefer to coach? Or let me ask you this. What are the differences in you find when you're coaching a youth shooter versus someone that may be 30 or 40 years old? Is there a big difference in the two?
There is. There definitely is. Like I said earlier, I believe shooting is much like an apprenticeship type model, right? Like if you want to become a proficient electrician, it takes X amount of years. Or if you want to be a pipe fitter, it takes X amount of years. I think shooting, if it's done right, is similar to that. What it is with the youth, they have such a new mind, right? And I tell them all the time, like, hey, you play Fortnite, come do the real thing, you know?
Yeah.
Let's blow stuff up for real. and then you get them hooked, and they catch on pretty darn quick.
Right.
Where with the more experienced, or if you want to call them older people, they're a little bit more impatient. Like, for example, you're given a lesson to a CEO or a CFO who has really, really been successful in the business world. Well, sometimes I think they forget how long that journey took for him or her to get to that position. Yeah. Well, shooting's no different.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the hardest things is, like, with the youth, like I said, they have that new mind. They're sponges. They're waving the gun all around and just want to break stuff, where with the more experienced older population, they're just a little bit more apprehensive, and they've seen everything on the internet. And mm-hmm. I was told to never let the bird beat my barrel. I always stay in front. Well, yeah, I mean, that's cool, but there's other ways too. I think one of the hardest things is to teach a guy who's been shooting trap for 20 years how to shoot a floating incomer properly.
I can't even shoot those.
I mean, it's gas on from the rip right off the arm. They're shooting at it. It's like, whoa, that thing's coming in another two or three more seconds at you, and it's going to land like 5 yards from you. You don't get bonus points for shooting it fast.
The Ohio Sporting Clays Association, I know you have a role in that association.
Yes.
Why did you decide to become a part of that? And, you know,
in the past, I was a trustee. And then I got out of the game for a little bit. And when I came back full swing, you know, it's just one of those things. You want to wrap yourself in this game, immerse yourself in this game. I was already doing a ton of fundraising, sponsoring, emceeing the state shoot, getting sponsors for the state shoot. And if I'm doing all that, well, then might as well be on the, you know, be a director and be on the board and have some influence on not only the state shoot, but some of the other great things that we're trying to get going in the state, involved with some youth stuff and maybe some stuff with some of the smaller clubs.
Yeah. I'm on the GSCA board, Georgia Sporting Clays Association board. And it's good to see people wanting to be a part of things like this, you know, to make the sport grow. And that's a topic that we get into on these podcasts all the time. Is, mm-hmm. you know, how do you want to see the sport grow? But, you know, if I was to ask you that, I'm sure you had some, you've had some opinions. So what ideas or thoughts run through your mind when this topic is mentioned? I'm sure you write them down.
No. Yeah. I mean, I remember like whether it was skateboarding and I wanted to throw myself down like 10 stairs, I would always write on my skateboard, try and you might, don't you won't.
Right.
Or like when I met my wife, like, hey, Bill, if you ask her out, she might say yes, or you'll never know though. She might say no. Right. So try and you might, don't you won't. So I think she laughs at me because she says I was persistent, but I think we just need to be persistent about who we are, getting the word out on social media, asking people questions about, you know, what do you know about our sport, seeking sponsorships. Like today, I sent an email to this clothing company because I'm outside freezing all the time and I spend a lot of money on their clothing. And I'm like, you know what? Why not ask them?
Yeah.
Right? Why not ask them if they'd be willing to help me out? And so I think we need to ask people in our game if they are willing to help out. And you can't be afraid of no, right?
Right.
But you also got to figure out who those players are. You know, and I know at every one of these clubs, there are some people who are influencers. And I think if you ask them, he or she would be willing to partake in sponsoring something or helping out with something with the youth. I think the whole youth path mm-hmm. is huge because, like, for me, it left a memorable impact that I wanted to come back to the game.
Yeah.
But I don't know in that 20, like that 18 to 30 range, I don't know if that's really our biggest target because life gets in the way right there.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think like there's a, you know, we could target the 30 and 40 year old population who are getting their legs under them and offer what some people don't like to do is offer like a recreational experiential learning opportunity where, hey, come shoot clays for a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get one person hooked and it's grown the sport.
Yeah. You know, everybody pretty much says the same thing. Pretty much. I mean, you have some differences, but for the most part, it's focus on the youth.
Yeah. And I think we're getting really strong traction, especially like all the charity events like at Cardinal or at Hillendale. I mean, you got 220 people there. And I love what Corey Cruz said. He said, hey, set up an NSCA table there, right? At those types of events, let them understand what this is all about, that there is a professional organization that represents clay target, you know, sporting clay shooting as a whole or skeet shooting as a whole or trap shooting as a whole. Mm-hmm. There are organizations out there that are governing body, just like the PGA.
Speaking of sponsors, I know you have some sponsors and I know some people you probably want to thank.
Yeah. Well, yeah, first of all, like my wife, I mean, I remember when I made the call to her to say, hey, what do you think, babe? Do I go for it? She said, go for it. Fiocchi's been huge. They're awesome. Mike at L&M Lens, DNA Armory, Ridge Creek Global, Compass Self Storage. Like not a day goes by where I'm not thankful for these organizations allowing me to be an ambassador for their brand. And I think, you know, ultimately we forget that sometimes that, you know, whether we're on social media or whether we're out there in the field competing, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have somebody that's willing to put their name on you, you're representing them.
You got to represent them right, you know.
Yep. Yep.
Let them see the benefit of being a part of the sport.
You know, I tell you too. I mean, you guys are doing a great job and getting the word out. That last episode with Will Hinton, I tell people, take a listen. That was probably one of the most informational podcasts I've ever listened to.
Have you met Will in person?
I never have, and I just think it'd be awesome.
he is a good dude. I'm telling you, he is, and he's funny. He is funny, a funny guy to be around. So he's a super guy.
Yeah, it's so cool to hear his path. I mean, I don't think many people know what those opportunities are, and they're there.
So, Bill, what else do you have going on, or what's coming up for you?
Just looking forward to the 2022 shooting year. Looking forward to, you know, hopefully the Caribbean Cup, then the Gator Cup, then the U.S. Open, and mm-hmm. keep rocking and rolling coaching and writing and trying to be the best dad and husband I can be.
Yeah. That's a job in itself. You know, you're talking about having time to coach and all of this, go to these shoots, and you know, the home life is a full-time job. I mean, you know, so it's having small kids and
I look at guys like, you know, Anthony's got three kids and mm-hmm. Don's got three kids. And what's funny is actually, now that I think about it, we all have girls. Isn't that funny?
Now, you're such good friends with Don because you went up through the NSCA instructor course, right? What are you now, level three?
Yeah, I'm level three. Yep. Yep.
Go into what you had to do to become a level three.
Well, you know, you obviously have to keep your attention to your logged hours and make sure you get your hours done and make sure you get your, you know, that time in. But then it's 4 days of rigorous testing. And I can tell you, like, a lot of people who haven't been through even a level one, mm-hmm. remember, the goal of a level one is when you take people out, make sure they're safe and have fun. That's the goal of a level one. So I'll hear people say, well, he's a level one instructor. Well, yeah, his goal as an instructor is to make sure people are safe and have fun. You know,
right.
The goal of a level one of the level one program is not to be the best diagnostics reader out there. As you get into the level two and the level three, yeah, you start looking at gun fit a little bit more. You start looking into eye dominance concerns more. You start looking into techniques more. You start looking into the mental training a little bit more. And, you know, both level twos and level threes that I was in, there were some people who didn't make it, and they always offer, hey, if you don't make it, you know, you can come back and take it again. And, it's a pressure cooker.
What are the
handwritten test is very challenging.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Hmm. Now, don't you have to have a certain amount of hours before you can be a level three also of coaching?
Yes. Yes. And I think
it's a bunch. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it definitely, it's just an awesome class. And we did that with Gary Wallstrom and Don and Sarasota. And, you know, I was fortunate to work side by side that whole weekend. I don't know if you remember Bobby Stitchcomb from Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bobby, I had the opportunity to meet him through that, and you know, God rest his soul. He's no longer with us, but that was one of the most, you know, enlightening weekends. I can tell you my learning career, whether it was through my master's degree or anything I did in the past, it was just awesome to learn alongside those people.
Yeah. Now, how many level threes are there? There's not a lot.
I would say that there's probably like maybe 60 to 80, something like that. I think what happens is they get logged on the NSCA website, and you know, some people want their name published and some people don't.
Ah, gotcha. Well, Bill, it's been good talking to you, man. I hope that your career takes off just like you want it to and continues to do good. And I guess I look forward to seeing you down here at some of these shoots in the South.
Yeah, I hope the same for you too, man. Keep up the great work, and really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.